Okay. Does the mic work?
And this one?
Okay, yeah. Cool. Hey, so good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for coming to this session. We've experienced some technical problems, so that's why we're a little bit late. Let's start. Basically, we're going to talk about developer productivity with SQL Server, how to achieve it, and so an appropriate start is to say what we mean by developer productivity. Basically, by productivity in general, we mean enabling you to achieve more within the time that you have, right? That's a very, very theoretical statement. Now, for the people who are developing database apps, maintaining database apps, deploying them, optimizing them, this basically means two major things. How to develop a new app, effective database app, as quickly and easily as possible, and then how to maintain it as easily and cheaply as possible throughout its lifetime. My name is Dražen. I'm a program manager in Microsoft Database Systems. Our team is developing SQL Server and Azure SQL Database. Borko, my colleague, is a program manager in the same team. And today we're going to show you some latest stuff coming with SQL Server 2016 and how those features should help you increase your productivity. So before we go there, let's do a mini poll. So how many of you are database admins or IT pros? Okay, so how many of you are database developers? Okay, and how many consider yourself to be both? Okay, that's what I thought. So I assume you have a good knowledge of SQL Server, or at least some knowledge. Are you using SQL Server? Okay, pretty good. So that's how we're going to take this forward. We won't start from the basic concept. So let me give you a few examples what I mean when I say increase productivity. So in general, the simpler the code, the better it is. Easier to develop, easier to maintain going forward. And of course, the faster it is, the better. Performance is always good. Sometimes it's critical. Sometimes it comes like a nice bonus. There are simple examples on how you could write less code and achieve the same thing. For example, if you were a new database developer wanting to split strings, you can go to the internet and look. There are various, numerous discussions on what's the best way to split strings, how to do it, what's the most performant way, what kind of cases any certain procedure covers that you can find online. And of course, if you can use CLR, there's a CLR, you can create a CLR table value function, and that should work pretty well. If you cannot use CLR, then probably the best solution is something like this. This is code written by Jeff Modden. It's out there in the community for a while. Lots of people using it, very popular. It seems to be very fast. But it's also very complex code. So if you run into something like this being a new database developer, this may be tricky, because if you take this code, then if you want to change it going forward, then that can be hard. It can be hard to maintain it. With SQL Server 2016, for example, we have eliminated the need for this by introducing a simple, simple, easy-to-use, intuitive, and faster variant, basically string split built-in function. And this function is exactly what the word says, string split. You can find it with IntelliSense. So instead of going online looking for solutions, now the idea is that the functionality is already in the database server and can easily be found and used. And this is a faster code. Basically, in some independent benchmarking done by a couple of MVPs, they've shown that string split in most cases works faster than other alternatives, including the one above. So it's definitely not only about simple tasks such as splitting strings. For example, what if you wanted to do tracking of data history on some of your tables for auditing reasons, for example? You can definitely do this with SQL Server 2014 and earlier versions, and many people have done it. Many people have built a solution with what they had back then. So those people know how not easy it was to do it, how complex and complex to maintain those solutions could have been. Because there are several aspects that you would need to take care of in building such a solution. For example, if you're keeping the history of data in another table that represents the history table of the table you want to track, as the schema of the original table evolves, So you need to evolve the schema of the history so that they stay aligned and make your code work through those changes. Then how do you track history of data in the table? Well, you can introduce triggers, right? And then that's cool for one table. Now, when you do this for many tables, you end up having lots of triggers that you need to maintain going forward. Or stored procedures. Or maybe you can do it in the app layer, and then the app will write whatever it needs to write into various tables, and you don't need to worry about it. But that's also not a happy solution. Maybe it moves the burden from the database admin and developer onto the application developer, right? And then if you are to analyze the historical versions of the data, then you have multiple tables. You need to replace your regular queries with some joins and then filters on timestamps and so on. So that's also not that easy. And finally, if you are to use this solution for auditing, well, then you need to make sure that nobody can tamper with the historical data in unsupported ways, because otherwise, what are you auditing if anybody can come and make any change to the history, right? That's kind of the purpose of something like this in auditing scenarios. The point is, and the point I'm trying to make here, is that with SQL Server 2016, we've introduced temporal tables, and temporal tables handle all of these aspects and more automatically, out of the box, and very easily for you. So basically, if you want to start tracking changes in a table, you run an alter table statement, if the table already existed, and that's it. All the changes to the data start being tracked. All the machinery that you were supposed to build by yourself before now becomes automatic. And then when you want to query the historical versions of data, well, you run your regular query that you ran before and add a simple query construct at the end that says, I'm interested in this data as of last year, right? And then you get the results. And that's pretty much it in terms of how do you start tracking data changes and how do you start analyzing them. We're going to stop at the end of the temporal section, and then we're going to handle questions, and then once again before the end of the session. Does that work? Okay, thanks. So I won't go into details about temporal tables here because we have a section on the feature, and we're going to go into details there. And we also have some demos that are our backup demos, but nevertheless, they will illustrate the concept. But before we go there, let's just take a step back and look at SQL Server 2016 and what we've done in this release to modernize the platform in these aspects, so to make it better for developing new apps easier or maintaining existing apps easier. So prior to SQL Server 2016, obviously, SQL Server has lots of functionality in various areas, and this is a complete list. I'm not trying to. This is my attempt to put together a list that's kind of complete list. It's not SQL Server 2016 features. I put some basics here. Now, obviously, SQL Server has a good set of data types that you can choose from when you're figuring what you want to do. It has a good set of operators and functions. Some string functions, utility functions, security functions, conversions, and so on. Then for text and semi-structured data, we have X queries and full text search for years. They're not that cool technologies today, but they're still very useful, and lots of people use them. And then probably the area that's less known in the SQL Server surface area is analytics. SQL Server actually has a very good set of aggregates, then basically ranking functions, percentile functions, and it can also do computation on entire columns and also on windows that move over the rows of the columns, so either cumulative windows or sliding windows. So in terms of analytics functionality, there's a lot of things built in already. And then geospatial is something that also comes built in with SQL Server. It's not being charged separately, it's like some companies do. And then basically, there's a good set of spatial types, methods, and a specialized index for handling spatial scenarios. Now, spatial scenarios a couple of years ago used to be mostly GIS, geographic information systems, and not much more. Lately, we're seeing a rising usage within applications that are location aware. Now more and more applications are location aware and interested into what's going on in the surroundings of a user. So we're seeing an increase in usage of this technology as well. And finally, there's a set of connectivity options and tools that you could use depending on the environment you like or you have chosen. So various drivers, frameworks, and tooling from the perspective like SSDT or SSMS. Now in SQL Server 2016, we have refreshed many of these areas. For example, we have added some new query constructs, new functions, either utility or string functions that make it easier to do some relatively small tasks easily and not mess with them, not go into messy workarounds. So string split is one of the examples there. And we're going to show you a couple of more examples in one of the demos, and I have a list in the end of the session. Now, in text and semi-structured data, we've added JSON processing. We have a section today on JSON support, so we're going into details there. I won't talk about it now. Polybase, of course, was added as a way to integrate SQL Server with data in Hadoop, and basically as a way to run T-SQL queries over the relational data and data in Hadoop and potentially join the data from the two worlds. So it can be a very useful feature if you have big data systems in your environment and you're interested in this kind of integration. Of course, we've added advanced analytics capabilities such as in-database R. If you have a data science team or analysts, quants, or whoever makes some advanced statistical models in your environment, with this, it becomes much easier to operationalize those things, not rewrite them into some other form of code and then run them somehow. You can take basically R code that somebody from these guys who understand R developed and run it close to the data in a safe environment. And temporal tables, of course, make it easy to analyze the data changes and history of data changes in the database. We're going to do a deep dive on temporal shortly. And also in the areas where we haven't extended the surface area, we have made performance improvements. So basically, if you are to use some of these features with SQL Server 2016, your experience will be much better because they will run much faster. So spatial functionality got a boost in performance up to 5 times. That includes index builds and also spatial queries with spatial predicates. Regardless, those are select queries, but also DML runs faster and with higher concurrency. And in window functions, basically we made lots of improvements there thanks to clustered column store index, batch mode processing, and also a refresh of the algorithms being used for those functions. So we have got some astonishing results. For example, if you're running a 48-core machine, only by upgrading from 2014 to 2016, you get something like 100x performance improvement on some of these analytic queries if you're using them over clustered column store index. That's a tip there. Okay, so having said this, this is kind of an overview of what we've been doing in SQL Server 2016 in this area. So I'll move to temporal tables, and I'll hand over to my colleague Borko, who will tell us more about temporal.
Thank you, Dražena. So before we go into details of temporal tables, I'd like to ask you a question. How many of you had a need to track historical data and analyze them later? Yeah, that's what I meant. What I mean. So basically, when we decided to introduce support, in-database support for temporal data processing, we were really inspired and motivated by the real needs and painful experiences that customers had when they actually tracked and analyzed historical data. And I think you would agree that every person who works with databases or who consumes the data at least once was in a situation to ask a fundamental question: how my data look a year ago, a day ago, a month ago, which fundamentally translates into a question: how this important business report or how this dashboard actually look a month ago. But not only that, there are some similar questions like, when data exactly changed, the data that I see now, when did it change, how it changed, what were the changes, when they happened. And also more advanced questions like, what are the dominant trends? What are the patterns? What are possible anomalies in my data? Everything is, all of these questions can be easily handled with a temporal data support. In addition to that, regulatory rules and compliance rules are pressing companies and organizations more and more to track historical data for future forensic and auditing analysis. So definitely tracking historical data is important, but without proper support in the database, that has never been an easy task. Therefore, our users had to build custom solutions, use whatever they had, typically triggers, typically application logic, store procedures, to track and maintain the history for future analysis. But all these workarounds, all these custom solutions actually have many drawbacks. They are expensive to build, maintain, they are inefficient, they are inflexible, and so on. So basically, with SQL Server, and Azure SQL Database, we made this task super easy. And there are two fundamental improvements that temporal tables in SQL Server brings to customers. First is you can start tracking data changes in your data, in your database, without any additional code in your application, completely transparently to your application. What's more important is that if you have existing application that use your database, you can start tracking data changes without any impact to those applications. That's extremely important. And another thing is when you have data tracked and stored, you can easily approach the data and analyze, focusing your analysis to any point in time, analyzing the trends, analyzing the patterns. There are many scenarios which can benefit from this. And obviously, data audit is one of these. When you need to start tracking data changes for auditing purposes, temporal tables are basically great and ideal choice for that. But there are some other scenarios. Sometimes people track data not only because of auditing purposes, but because they want to analyze trends. We call that scenario time travel. When you actually go over time, visit multiple points in time, compare them side by side, understand what has changed, why it has changed. That's very convenient scenario for using temporal. Finally, in data warehousing, there is a design pattern which is called slowly changing dimensions. Typically, dimensions are considered as holding information that most people don't want to see. In terms of trends and changes, but in some cases it's very important to build that pattern. And if you use temporal tables, you can actually replace existing logic, or you can implement slowly changing dimensions without any additional code in your ETL process, in your data warehousing application. And finally, since you're tracking data that you plan to analyze later, you can use temporal also to correct erroneous data in your tables, made either by humans or applications, because you have full history of changes, you can easily restore the good state of data at any point in time. And what is temporal and how it works? So temporal in SQL Server is actually another type of a user table. When you create a table, you can choose to create a temporal table, right? But in reality, to be completely open, it's not a single table. It's a pair of tables. The good thing is history table that is created and associated with the main table is actually something that you don't need to take care of. If you wish, and that's the default, you can let system to create a history shadow table that has matching schema to your main table. And it is there to actually store all changes that happens. A single DDL creates a pair of tables. Now, although system creates history table for you, it's completely open and accessible for you so that you can customize that table in any way. You can create additional indexes. You can choose to be a column store index type of storage. You can actually build specific statistics, whatever you need to tune your performance. But the important thing is default history table is created optimally for temporal type of workloads, so you don't need to take care. When you insert the data into temporal tables, what happens? You actually insert the data into the main table because you insert a new fact that didn't have history. It is for the first time there. So that operation doesn't affect the mirrored history table. But when you update or delete or apply any modification operation on your main table, what happens behind the scene is that the previous version of the row goes automatically into the history table without any intervention from your side. That operation is transactionally consistent, it's synchronous, and it is what the system does for you. When you read the data, typically your OLTP application, those applications always need to know what is the latest state of the data quickly and efficiently, right? With the temporal, you'll get the latest state of the data extremely efficiently because you are reading the main table without effectively accessing the history table. But when you use any of these temporal querying capabilities, which is give me the state of the data as of yesterday, or give me all changes that happened between last month and today, then what happens is that temporal query that you send in a very simple form is being sent to SQL Server. SQL Server translates that query into a set of operation completely transparently for you, joins the history and the current table, push down predicates, does whatever need to get the correct data back to you. Again, from the application point of view, from user point of view, it's extremely efficient, extremely simple. Now, let's see a couple of customer stories, a couple of real use cases where temporal is already being used in the production. The first case is a use-based company, Rockstep, that is a young, dynamic company that builds a cloud-based solution for managing laboratory data, actually for storing data about scientific experiments. And that data needs to be audited. There are very strict regulations with regards to that area, right? So in order to be competitive, in order to come quickly with their solution, they adopted temporal because temporal gave them whatever they needed. They use temporal widely in all tables. The entire database is actually historized. And in their words, that reduced the development cost and the maintenance cost significantly. So they were able to come to become available in the market very, very quickly. Another example is British Petroleum. So this is a famous and big company, and internal IT department in BP is actually utilizing temporal for a slightly different scenario. It's not here. It's not here about auditing data. It's more about the time travel. So what happens here? So internal IT organization in BP tracks entire topology, all servers, all databases, all hardware, software, drivers, versions, whatever. And they want to have exact track about all changes to time, right? So typically what they do when they plan the next infrastructure investments, they compare how the infrastructure grown from like in last 6 months. And they actually renders the picture or graph of their infrastructure over time to see, understand the patterns of changes, right? So it's not auditing, it's more of a time travel and a trend analysis scenario. Again, they found that temporal is very easy to implement, very easy to be used. And finally, we do have third customer who has built their monitoring solution for SQL Server and Microsoft family of products. It's Flex Services, that's Solid Queue. They actually use temporal, again, to store trends about performance data. The main scenario they need is they need to store the baseline about the performance, and every day they need to report about performance changes, right? So they can notify their customers, their users, hey, something is going wrong with your database. Yesterday, the performance was good, today is not. You need to do something about that. They recommend what can be done based on the pattern analysis. And again, with temporal, they've come up with a V2 version of the application. Previous application was implemented as a typical SQL Server application. They completely removed the entire layer with all these custom tables, custom storage layers. They remove a huge amount of stored procedures and just reuse temporal. So in their own words, that reduced by 60% overall development and the maintenance cost they had. So those three stories are actually very important for us, because they are a testament that this feature is actually very useful and it actually delivered on its promise. So I hand over again to Drazen.
So here's an interesting question. I didn't hear whether you talked about it or not, but what if I'm a company who have already implemented a solution that's kind of like this?
Yep.
So how do I migrate to temporal tables?
So that's a great question, actually. So we designed temporal in a way to actually simplify both development from scratch, but also migration scenarios. So if you have, say that you have a solution that already tracks the historical data, what we support is you can alter existing tables, you can decorate existing table that you have with the existing data with temporal attributes. And temporal attributes, as we will see in the demo, every temporal table needs to have a period definition for every row, which says, hey, this row was valid from that time to that time. And then also you need to specify reference to the history table. Now, actually, there are two scenarios with existing solutions. If you have a solution and you have data in your database and you want to start tracking history from today and later on, then you can just simply convert that table to a temporal. System will create empty history table, and from that point on, you'll be able to track changes. That's one scenario. But another scenario is you had triggers, you had application logics, and typically you might have either single table for full history or two tables. People sometimes do what they basically do the same thing. Keep the current data in one table and history in another table. There is a very simple path. It's actually about executing one or two alter table statements that will reestablish the link between your two tables. And from that point on, it's SQL Server in the driving seat. It will actually continue tracking the history. And you can completely remove all triggers, store procedures, just delete them and forget about it.
So basically, it's adding some columns. Thanks. Okay.
Thanks.
So let me just summarize. So basically, it's adding a couple of columns to the table I want to track. Then it's, of course, I need to check a little bit of schemas. Do they match, right? Because
yes.
SQL Server will expect schemas to match. And SQL Server can track this for me, right? When
yes.
I try to connect the two tables, right? And then I point this table to the history table. And then we also do data checks.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, those are all the good points. So not only that path is basically supported, but also we do control that the data quality is appropriate, right? So as Drazen mentioned, of course, if you don't have these two column date columns, we will add it for you. But even if you have existing columns, you pre-populate your data, you know the period of validity, we'll reuse that. But we will then do the schema check. If you had two tables, we'll say, hey, those two tables are compatible. That's fine, we can continue work. But also we have something that is called data consistency check. We must ensure that rows or row versions that belong to a single fact with a single primary key, those rows must not overlap in time, because that means that for some period of time you have two, three multiple versions of the truth. That's something that we do not allow, and we do have incorporated a check that will notify that operation is not.
This is an inherent characteristic of system versioning, right?
Yes.
So if somebody is doing system versioning now, then you would expect these overlaps not to happen, and that's what we're checking for.
Yes.
Okay.
And we do not generate overlaps once you start working with the built-in feature, right? Built-in support.
Okay, cool, thank you. So we'll continue about temporal still, managing growth of historical data. Now, obviously, people always ask, with temporal, it seems that I'm going to generate a lot of data. History can grow very quickly. So what are you doing in terms of data retention? Well, in SQL Server 2016, temporal really works nicely with stretch. You can take the history table and stretch it to cloud. So that's one option. Basically, it gives you an infinite history table. There was a session yesterday that Borko did with Joe Young on how stretch and temporal work together. If there's a recording of that session, I would recommend it. Also, there's lots of materials online yes. on this scenario. It works really nicely. Then, of course, there are some well-known and standard ways to do data retention, table partitioning. For example, the history table can be partitioned, and then you can apply a sliding window scenario where you the oldest partition goes away, a new partition is created and being populated. Partitioning, of course, can be done on the time dimension, so that basically all this data, which you're no longer interested in, you can switch that out and move it either to an archive or maybe delete it. Then, of course, obviously, you could create a custom delete script. You turn off system versioning, you go delete some rows, you turn it back on, and it operates as if nothing has happened, right? You, of course, you need high admin privileges for this, because only administrators can turn off system versioning. They are also the only ones who can turn it on.
Yeah, just one comment. Basically, when it comes to security, temporal is fully integrated with SQL audit, so you can track actually who assigned permissions to your temporal tables, so that you can use it in the end-to-end auditing scenario. Not only the data is actually protected, but also you have insights who is changing the configuration and control the security.
Okay, so there's an MSDN article on all the options to manage data retention of temporal tables. But there's also a new option coming very soon to Azure SQL Database. It's a matter of days, and that's built-in retention policy. So we've heard the request for data retention, and what we did over the last couple of months is we built an automatic mechanism. So basically, there's an alter table statement for the system versioned table where you tell it, I want to keep N months or any number you want of months or years of data, depending on what your audit requirements are, for example. And then the system will look at the data in the history table, and all the data that becomes older than now minus 6 months, in this case, is pending removal, right? And then there's a background process that asynchronously runs, and from time to time it cleans this data out. And basically, data removal is the option that we will have soon. So not moving data somewhere else, but basically deleting it. And it's important to say that temporal really works great with other features, both those who have already existed in SQL Server and all of those who have appeared in SQL Server 2016. So basically, if you have memory-optimized tables that you're doing your high-intensity, low-latency DML on, you can even track history of data changes for those tables without compromising the performance. And the way we do this is if you turn a memory-optimized table into a system version table, we create an in-memory structure that basically takes the historical rows from the memory-optimized table. And then a different thread in the background runs and moves the data to disk periodically. So basically, this has been designed so that you can really easily turn on temporal, even for memory-optimized tables, not compromise the performance of the OLTP workload, and still be able to move historical versions to disk and keep them there, also for auditing purposes if you need, or some of these other scenarios. Column store is a recommended option. We do recommend it as clustered column store, as history table, because it will give you great compression. And also, most of the analytics queries that you run over the history table, for example, I want to see how certain data changed from 9 months ago until 6 months ago. That's a range that you can scan from the column store index pretty quickly. Stretch database, we already mentioned. You can keep your data history forever with it. The data gets moved to the cloud. Security features like row-level security, always encrypted, dynamic data masking, they all work. And in terms of tooling, there's pretty neat support for temporal tables in SSMS, SSDT. You'll see in the demo that SSMS recognizes this type of tables. It has a way of treating them in the Object Explorer. and syntax highlighting and so on, script outs and whatever of the features in SSMS or SSDT you are using. So having said that, before we go to JSON, I promised taking some questions for Temporal. So yeah, okay, you're next, sorry.
So the temporary tables respond to the questions of when and how. Yeah. How about who question?
Yeah, that's a good question. So basically, today you can track who changed the data using application logic, maintaining that column from your application. And what Temporal will do, it will automatically keep the history of changes. Now, it doesn't satisfy all scenarios when you need to understand both who initially created the row or row version and who actually after that modified. We are considering to expand this. I don't have timelines, but we recognize the scenario and the need. Yeah.
So if for purpose of auditing, you could track this down, but not to the level of precision. Right?
Yeah. You could do some of the auditing from your application. We will historize that. Whatever you put in your user column, we will historize. But there are some limitations.
Yes, I can do that. There's no problem. But it would be nice to have it natively there.
As I said, we recognize that it's a pretty common scenario, and we do consider to expand Temporal.
Okay, so we have the gentleman here, and then we're going to move on.
In your history table, is it storing the whole row or just the fields that
change? It stores the whole row. Yeah, the history table has the exact same schema as the current one. So therefore, but a history table is by default created with the compression turned on, page compression, which really gives you at least 5 to 7, depending on how many columns you change with a single transaction. If you're changing a single or two columns, then you'll get great compression. But also column store. With the column store, you can get even much more bigger compression. So it's not that expensive, even if we store the entire row. Yeah.
So for column store, like 10 to 15x is something you could get easily. It's not like 2x or 3x. Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh. The question was whether we actually tracking, do we track whether the value was changed, right, in reality. So there are some false updates, right? People do false updates. Currently we do not recognize every update is tracked. So we do recommend people to include that logic into their application. They can also use Temporal to backtrack that application in generating false updates, right? There was a requirement. I think there is also a connect item. Please go vote for it, and we will prioritize. Yeah.
So we had a question there, and then we're gonna go.
Yeah, okay.
I thought the gentleman first. Sorry. he's been there.
I think gentleman was the first one who wanted to ask the question.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. We will.
Yeah.
Is this enterprise edition only?
Of course, no.
No.
It's. All editions. It's developer feature. Everybody needs it. Yeah.
So none of the things we're mentioning today are in enterprise edition only. All of them are everywhere.
Of course, if you want to combine Temporal with column store, then that's the enterprise
and that's
only.
I mentioned column store too. So that's the reason why cluster column store index is not the default option for the history table, even though we recommend it. Right, but we didn't put it as default because it's unavailable in the standard. I can't comment on that. That's a question not for us. So basically, I can't make comments on that. Yes, please.
I have a question about.
So let's go you first, and then we're going to take your question.
I have a question about schema changes. If I want to change like a var char into an int, if it only contains numerical values, so changes like that require a drop of creating a new table, transfer the data, and then dropping the old one. So when you drop the table, does that break the association with the temporal table?
So what happens if you convert your data in place, if you are essentially converting from var char to integer and that's possible to do, then you can alter main table without breaking the relationship. It will just change the data type in both tables transparently for you, right? That's the size of data operation, but that's possible. If you need to completely change the data type, you had values that cannot be converted to something else, then you need to, on your own, break the connection between the tables, do whatever you need, update the both tables, and then link them again.
So, sir?
Did you have to create a new index type, especially for point in time queries, or did you reuse something sort of like geospatial index?
So today with temporal, we do use whatever we had. We didn't introduce any new index. The default index that we create on the history table, though, is optimal for all these four system time type of clauses, where you typically need to check values for both columns, start and end. And basically, we do have cluster index that covers that.
So that's the default option. However, yeah. You can add indexes to the history table.
You can add additional indexes. There's no specific temporal type of index yet.
Yeah. Yes?
We do not have official benchmarks, but I can share some unofficial results that we have. So basically, first of all, temporal is definitely better than any custom solution that you can implement. It's better than any trigger application logic. And our measurements in our tests show that the improvement is like 20% or something, right? So, there is overhead that temporal adds to operations compared to non-temporal tables, but that's not a fair comparison because with a non-temporal table you don't have history. Now you have some new feature, and you need to pay for it, right? Insert operation and select operation, they are completely without any additional performance impact. They behave as with the non-temporal table. Now, update and delete, in our test, what we've seen introduced 20-25%, but that's actually similar to maintaining additional index that you would create on a regular non-temporal table. You know, every time when you create additional index, you need to pay extra price, and that's something that you can expect here. And just to say, we had a conversation with a couple of customers that adopted temporal in their production, and it passed their performance test. They were very, very satisfied.
Yeah, it depends on how efficient their own custom implementation was, right? But we've seen one of our internal teams, they reduced the durations of their queries by like 60%.
Yeah, and also they reduced the footprint of for the historical
and
data
the footprint,
a few times. Yeah.
And the differences between that and auto-tuning
Auto-tuning?
Yeah. No.
There shouldn't be. No. Sir?
So the question, let me see if I understood correctly your question. You referring here to the case where you're using transactional replication or?
Mirror.
Uh-huh. So basically, mirroring, that type of replication is not supported with temporal tables. So you cannot have temporal table on primary and secondary. We do support always-on. Always-on is fully supported. Because of the physical replication of data and having clock synchronization between the servers, but other type of replication are not possible. But if you use transactional replication, here is a very useful scenario. People sometimes use transactional replication to offload their reporting to the secondary, right? So what we do support, you can have a regular table on primary and you can have temporal table on secondary. So basically you will be collecting historical data only on secondary and you can run your analytics on secondary side, temporal analytics on secondary side. So that's a very compelling scenario that you can try out.
So let's take two more. Yeah.
No, we do not. I mean, this is fully orthogonal to the backup and restore. We haven't noticed any issue. Now, with the retention that Rajan mentioned, there is a specific behavior. For instance, let's say that you are restoring data, you take the backup from a while ago, and in that database, this is something that you cannot experience now. This is something that you will be able to experience when retention becomes available. So then, if you take some older backup and you restore, if retention is active, it will start removing all the rows. Therefore, by default, when you restore the database, the retention is blocked, and you can need to go and enable it explicitly.
So let's take that one, green shirt. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
So Mary Smith went to Mary Jones.
Yeah.
And then you do a restore, and it's now Mary Smith again. And now it gets updated.
Database restores the entire database.
Right.
This is the table level feature. This is table level feature, doesn't have anything with the
log. I think this is about replication, right? So you're thinking, I am
Mary Smith becomes Mary Jones, and so the original Mary Smith goes to the history.
Okay.
You do the restore before the change was made, and it's now Mary Smith.
But both tables are in the same database, right? So you will restore both tables to the previous
table. What I'm trying to say is it's completely orthogonal and consistent. Yeah.
This is a finer grain feature than the backup restore. That's the catch. Yeah. So green shirt lady.
Can you use mic, please?
Sorry, we don't see you very well in the back. We don't hear you, sorry.
I was just wondering, you mentioned that this could replace other homegrown features or solutions that people have built, but what about existing features of SQL Server, like change data capture or change tracking? If you're currently using those, is it possible to convert from that to temporal? Is this meant to replace those solutions?
Okay, so the question was about relation between change data capture and temporal. Those two features are actually designed for different scenarios. While you typically use change data capture to identify changes and feed some external system, typically data warehousing, temporal is mainly designed to analyze historical data for a longer period of time. It is unlikely that you'll use change data capture to track history data for 7 years, 10 years, like for auditing purposes. Of course, you could do that, but performance penalty will be big. Yes, theoretically and practically, you can use temporal to mimic, to produce the same type of output as with change data capture. And especially that can be a workaround in Azure SQL Database, because in Azure SQL Database currently, change data capture is not available. So you can build your solution based on temporal. You can use temporal to identify deltas between points in time,
Okay, thanks. We need to move on. Tell you something about JSON support in SQL Server. And then we're going to have a demo where some of these things will become more clear around temporal and also how you use it and how you use JSON. Basically, quickly, scenarios for the JSON feature in SQL Server. These features are primarily for data interchange between SQL Server and, let's say, an external application or a service. Lots of modern services, they take in JSON, they give you JSON, they have exposed REST APIs, apps as well. So this is a way to push the transformation functionality into the database so that you, when you want to take some relational data from your database and feed it to one of these apps, they already receive JSON that they know how to handle, right? And in a way, this is kind of an abstraction between the database and the application, but also like the database developer and the database admin and the app developers that may be developing web apps, for example. So the other scenario is, of course, if you want to exploit some of the agility of NoSQL, this is very hot. People are talking about NoSQL as this agile and fast system, right? So essentially, it comes down to if you have a relational data model already in place, you spend time to design your schemas, everything works, it's normalized, and then you suddenly need to add some data to it, like in a web interface, we're adding some tags to something, right? So tags can be, there can be two of them for a product, there can be seven of them for a product. So how do I handle this in my relational schema? Well, to begin with, I can add an additional column, I can put JSON in it, and I have functions to analyze that JSON when I need it in the database, right? So, so that's kind of the point. This is similar to XML. It's no different to the XML conceptually. It's only the JSON is very hot now, and then basically that's the new element here. So how do you choose the service? In cloud, for example, we have Azure SQL Database, which is a SQL Server as a managed database, right? And there is DocumentDB. So lots of people come and ask, okay, so how do I choose what service I'm using, right? I have some JSON, so where do I process it? Well, the answer is really, what are you looking for, right? If most of your data is relational, it's going to be in a relational model, and you have some JSON use cases, you need some additional flexibility, you are receiving JSON from somebody, you're giving data in form of JSON to somebody, then Azure SQL Database is a good place for you, right? Because it will give you all of the characteristics of a mission-critical database server that you need, plus you will have some additional flexibility to handle JSON. If you're looking for a NoSQL store, document store, that handles JSON documents, indexes everything, and is always ready to like give you query capability on all of the fields of the JSON objects you give it, and JavaScript is your language, and so on and so on, then DocumentDB is the right system for you. That's kind of a very high-level decision tree there. So what is JSON functionality in SQL Server? Well, let's assume you receive some JSON. You have a JSON document on the left-hand side. You can, one, store it in the database as NVARCHAR. We don't have a new native JSON type. Basically, you can store the documents as they arrive as an NVARCHAR column in a table. Or you can transform it into a relational table if that's the way that is more useful to you, right? Depends on what you're going to do with the data. Are you only storing it and you're going to retrieve it from every now and then? Then maybe just store it as JSON, right? If you intend to do some serious analytics with it, then transform it into tables because we have lots of querying and analytics capabilities when you transform it into a relational form, right? And then if you decide to store it as JSON, there are some built-in functions to help you process it. So you can check whether it's valid JSON. That is JSON function. You can extract some scalar values from the JSON document that are of interest to you with JSON value. You can extract JSON objects from the JSON document with JSON query, and you can modify the values in the JSON document with JSON modify function. You can index the data from JSON documents, not in the blobs directly. There's a technique with computed columns that I'm showing a little bit later. There is a way to do some indexing as well if you need to. For example, lots of people, they need to query on a single value from a JSON document. That's, again, some kind of an ID that some app gave it to them, right? So there's a way to do things like these without actually incurring serious performance hits when you do these queries. And let's see how it works. Yeah, finally, sorry. So you can, of course, export relational data from the database in JSON format with using the for JSON clause in your select queries. So you just add for JSON in the end. I'm going to show you how this works in a minute. So if we're transforming JSON to a table, we will use OpenJSON table valued function. We will give it this JSON document and provide a with clause that it is essentially a mapping on how to extract values from the JSON document and to which columns in the output to map it to, right? So here, I'm telling it to take this number, $.order.number from the JSON documents, which means root and then go down into order and then pick up the number value. And that's what I'm providing in the red letters in the with clause. And then I'm telling it to store that into the number column, which is supposed to be varchar 200. With this kind of mapping, I can take and extract from the JSON document what I need. And that's something something people commonly do. You don't need the entire JSON doc. You're not interested in the entire document. You just need some values. So just use OpenJSON, unpack it, take what you need, and put it somewhere, right? So it works the other way around. If I have a table, a result set of a query, then I would do something like this. I would do select number, date, customer, price, quantity from a table, and I would say for JSON path at the end of the query. And then the only thing I still need to provide it is the way to map these columns onto a structure of the output JSON, right? And that one I'm doing with aliases of the projected columns. So I'm telling it take number from this table and put it into $.order.number into the output JSON. So this is the highlight here, right? So basically, I'm literally taking this S0.43.659 and putting it into the output JSON document over there into the appropriate path. Now, there is an out option for for JSON that will create a structure based on the structure of the relational query, but that one is more of kind of to get you started and for some cases that are really simple. For real usage, I think that for JSON path, when you actually specify the mapping, is more useful and more practical. And then finally, I mentioned what do you do for indexing. Here's a table, it has an ID, it has an order number, it has sales order items, which is nvarchar max. That's where I'm going to store JSON documents into. So each document goes into a row of this table. What I'm doing, I have a check constraint on it to check whether it's a valid JSON. If it's not, I'm not going to take it in. And what I also do, I take JSON value of $.order.price, and I put it into this price computed column. Why I'm doing this? Because I want to index on price. And then I create an index, which is a regular SQL Server B3 index on price. So when I run a select query that has a filter on price, I will use this index. Now, of course, the difference between doing this and having a native JSON type with a native JSON index would be that I eventually, when I find the row in the table with this technique, I still need to unpack the entire JSON doc, take what I need from it, and that's the performance hit. If I had a native JSON index, I would be able to go a couple of more steps into the structure of the data itself, into the document, and then I wouldn't have to read the entire document. So that's kind of the way to think like how different this is from having a JSON specific JSON index, for example. And then I'll hand it over to Borko here. There's one slide and then demo.
Thank you, Dražen. So there are a couple of things that are coming soon in addition to what Dražen said about JSON. First, we do work on the good integration between JSON and the column store, which means you can use column store as a storage option for storing JSON documents. And not only that, you'll get a great compression again, because JSON will be compressed very well, but also the batch mode processing, which is a powerful property of the column store, will be used when you analyze queries using the JSON functions. And that actually opens up a new scenario, storing JSON documents somewhere in the column store in your database and then running analytics using JSON functions without needing you to extract the data into the relational form and do unnecessary extra steps. So we've seen, preliminary results, that analytics query that use JSON value clause are way better using on the column store than on the row store. So this is very promising. You should stay tuned when it becomes available.
And it's important to mention that JSON is a blob, right? So this also means that blobs will be supported in Cluster Column Store Index soon. Because we're introducing support for blobs in general. And then JSON will benefit from it.
Yeah, it will side benefit, but basically if you're storing other blobs, you'll get performance boost.
Yeah.
And another thing is we also do enable JSON scenarios with in-memory OLTP, similar to temporal. So if you have highly concurrent workloads, transaction workloads that like a large number of users and transactions, So you can use inside natively compiled code, which is actually the most powerful part about the in-memory technology. You can use, again, JSON native functions to extract the JSON or convert the JSON data to relational or vice versa. Now, I'd like to tell a few words about another customer that is using actually both temporal and JSON in their application. These guys are B1s. They're a social network for the artist. They built a social network application using SQL database as a backend. And basically what they do, how they utilize iFeatures. So they lack database experts. As a matter of fact, they have only Pascal, who is a MVP, a person who knows something, who knows a lot about SQL Server, and they have a bunch of web developers who actually can develop application quickly. So what they did, developers asked for Pascal to abstract the database for them. We do not know to write queries. We do not know to access the database. Do something about it. So what Pascal did, and at the same time, they, of course, need to track all the customer records for the auditing purposes. So basically, Pascal came to a good idea. He used temporal for the base logic, but he sends the data to the application in JSON format. So those web developers, actually, what they do, every request that goes to the database ends up in a store procedure that gets the data back into the JSON and returns back. And those guys actually process JSON using the JavaScript, using the languages that they understand, and they are good with, right? So that's the way how they overall in the entire team increase the productivity using the technologies that we provided. Now, let's go to the demo.
Yeah, we need to switch this.
Yeah, we need to switch the screens.
Cool.
This is the backup demo. We had technical issues, so unfortunately, I won't be able to show everything that I planned. But you can stop me. We can discuss. You can ask the question. So here is a scenario. Say that I'm working in a company like B1s, right? So again, I need to build a web-based application, and that application needs a database to store the data. In this case, it's a product catalog. It's a kind of a product inventory. I can go to the application log to the site and see, like, what are the available products? What is their, I don't know, availability, price, sizes, stuff like that. It's, of course, a simplified scenario. And I want to show you how it's relatively easy to build this application using the features that we talked about. So at the first glance, this is a regular application. I can see different products. I can navigate through pages. I can search. That's all fine. It will return results. But here is a slider on top. If I use that slider, I can easily see state of my product inventory over time. You've seen that some products have changed. If I move the slider, so this is not but so responsive because it's running, it's hosted somewhere in the other end of the universe. But let me see. The point is, when I move the slider, it changes the data, changes the properties. You can see that I actually can see state of my product inventory as of time. This is great. But not only that, I can easily see history of every individual product. If I click here, I'm presented with the full history of this product. It's a long history. I can see something shorter. But the point is, I can go and basically analyze how this product changed over time. This is very useful, right? Now, I want to show you how this is relatively easy to be implemented using the feature that we talked about. I'm a Pascal here. I need to create a data model, and I need to somehow create and design the data access layer so that my web developers can easily work with this, right? The only thing that I need to do is, when I start developing this application, I need to create my main table, which is a product table here, as a system version temporal table. What are the main properties? As I mentioned previously, every temporal table has two additional columns that must be data into, and a product definition, which is actually a metadata concept, a period concept, which is a metadata concept, which says, hey, every row has a period of validity from this to that value, right? And another part of the definition is reference to a history table. So what I mentioned before, if you have your own history table with full history, just bring it. And since the system will continue collecting history from that point on, if you don't have history table, this statement will create empty history table with all indexing and compression options optimal for you to start tracking. Nothing else is necessary. All regular DMLs, whatever you work, merge, deletes, updates, whatever worked for you, just continue using it. There is another scenario. You develop a great application, but product without history, and there is a business demand to be competitive in the market. How about creating a time travel through our product catalog? It's possible. You can easily add two new columns. You can create a period definition, again, reference to the history table. But look at this. There is a new cool keyword that we introduced that's hidden, which means I'm able to add two columns to existing table, but no one will see those columns unless they explicitly reference that column. That's awesome thing, because that guarantees that existing application will continue working, and nothing will happen. In terms of problems, issues, and stuff like that, but history will be preserved automatically. Now let's see what is the sketch of my data access layer for the application. I need to show, as you could see, I'm showing top 10 products on my initial page, and actually that's what we see, right? When I see the latest state of the data, nothing has changed, right? I'm just running the regular query. Now this is the slider part. Please see how it's simple. I want to navigate to 2015. Only thing that I need to add here is just for system time as of and a date. And that's all. That's the only difference for you. But not that you can also go to a predefined point in time. You can dynamically go to the past. You can say, hey, give me the history that is a year ago from this point. You can easily use a variable. And actually, you'll be able to do that. Let me just show you quickly execution plan for this. Although query is simple, SQL Server is doing all heavy lifting. You know, I have history table. I know what is the history table. This is the main table. Those are the predicates. Generate the optimal plan that will figure out what is the data to be returned to the customer. So that's the actually magic of using TimeParallel. Now, you've seen this drill down to an individual product. When I clicked to a blade, I saw a couple of versions. Here is how it's simple. This is for system time all. Give me all the versions that belongs to this product. It's that easy. Now, a nice addition to the scenario, it's not something that you've seen in the application, but imagine that Temporal has one actually characteristics that we didn't mention. It stores dates in the UTC, which means it's very good for building global applications, right? Wherever you store the data, it's UTC, it's the same time. But basically, users love to see data in their own time zone, right? But you know, probably know that converting between time zone, it's not an easy task. Why? Because all these rules, they are changing over time. Governments decide from year to year to change when they switch to DST and back from DST, and that's a hell of a...
Yeah, I think DST, if they knew how complex it would be for IT professionals, they wouldn't do it.
Yeah. We had conversation in Microsoft. Brazil is one of the most complex countries. For the current year, let's say this is a new year, and I think that we had maybe 15 days or a month in advance to actually get the official information when DST will happen, because it's...
And oh, it's changing from year to year.
Yeah, it can. I mean, typically they keep the date, but it's something that can just say in month in advance. Yeah, we'll go to DST that day. And that's very difficult. Now, this Well, we introduced the very convenient functionality. It's a at time zone. So basically, you can convert the stored UTC data to Eastern Standard Time and interpret the data in this very zone. And also, you can do other way around. You can query the data using the local time, because you are the user. You have local time. You don't know what is the UTC, right? You will provide your time using this nice function. We will convert that to UTC and then query the temporal. Just one note. Yeah.
So just a note here. This is not temporal functionality. At time yes. zone, you can use wherever,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So this is one of those utility things that I said we're adding, and there's more. Because as we see what people do and what people need, we also add other stuff. So hidden columns, one of the things that will soon, without giving you a timeline, come to columns not only in temporal tables, right? So things like those are the things that we're doing to try to improve the product overall when it comes to developer productivity as we defined it. Sorry, Borko.
Yes. So yeah, in this very example, just make sure that you convert your input parameter into UTC so that system can reuse the index, because data is indexed on UTC data, right, in the temporal table. But as Dražen pointed out, you can use it anywhere. So yeah, and then in addition to what we've seen related to temporal, let me just show you the other part of the demo, which is actually how is JSON being utilized, how Pascal is using JSON. So the only thing that he needs to do is actually to append this for JSON clause to the end of his select statement, and JSON data goes to the web application, and then web developers can do whatever, use the JavaScript or some other tools.
So maybe we should go back and wrap up, because I want to show you the list of these other things that you may find handy. We're going to stay here for any additional questions after the session. So feel free to come here and ask more. And especially people in the back, we didn't really see you. So if you were raising your hands when we had the Q&A, sorry. We'll stay here and you can ask us questions after the session. So some of the other T-SQL enhancements that we've done, but also some that are coming soon. Left-hand side, string split, I already mentioned. Drop if exists, obviously, no more. Mumbo-jumbo there. You just drop things if they exist. Otherwise, nothing happens. At time zone, Borko shown. Compress, decompress is basically a way to do compression into zip and from zip on the database side. So you can do the same on the app side. You can send data compressed and compress them in the database and vice versa. And then coming soon, we're going to have string ag, which is a nice counterpart of string split, right? So aggregating strings from a column with a specified separator, and then translate, which is a multiple replace statement in strings.
Yeah.
And then basically trim on both sides, so leading and trailing, so to simplify things there a little bit. And we're doing something that's not in this category of things, but bulk insert from Azure Blobs. So let's say you have some data in Azure Blobs, you have Azure SQL database, you want to load it quickly into the database, play with it, bulk insert will do the trick, and it will just pick up data from a URL you give it and load it into the database. So things like these are relatively small things, but you do these like every now and then, and over years it adds up, right? So that's the idea. Like let's reduce some of that time spent on workarounds and painful things you need to look up in documentation, right? And then it leaves you more time to do what you do best, which is like your main application, your main business. So takeaways, very simple. SQL Server, come on, Mr. Remote. Nothing works here today, technically. So SQL Server 2016 is the modern platform to power your next app. Next one is move your data back in time with temporal. And the third one is connect your database to modern apps and services with JSON. Those are the three main points I would like to take you to take away from here today. Look at SQL Server. Look at what is being refreshed with. There are things like at time zone. There are things like string split, string gag, and so on. look for those when you extend your app and you do your regular work. And then look at temporal and JSON as two very serious features that can help you a lot in if you have these use cases. Some links, some resources here. Our emails, so feel free to drop an email for any question if you don't get to them now after the session. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.